SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. All 32 NFL teams are now officially in training camp. We'll get to the big contract news and all the news and notes that you need to know around the National Football League. We'll do that in our opening half hour of this full hour up until 1 p.m. Eastern time. Live right here on Football Full Circle. In our second half hour, we will conclude the week at Media Days, talking season, the third and final day in Indianapolis of Big Ten Media Days, the fourth and final in Charlotte at ACC Media Days, as we near a month where football will be played. That's exactly 1 week from today, August 1st, the Hall of Fame game in the National Football League to kick off the preseason in Canton between the Bears and the Texans. And when it means August, Joe, that means college football as well.
Oh, baby, this is what it's all about. The calm before the storm, baby. Yeah, I could finally taste it. I will say, you know, with the media days, you get a little bit of a glimpse of the upcoming season. It gets you prepped and ready. But now as we start to see training camps open for the NFL, as we start to see basically 4 weeks away from the start of the college football season, you really get involved, right? The intensity gets kicked up a notch, and this is what we want to see now. Now it's the final stretch run, the final preparation, which teams can make it, which teams potentially won't be there in the end. And for the NFL as well, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, especially in terms of starting quarterbacks. Which ones are up to the task? Josh Allen, can he win an AFC championship? Get his team to a Super Bowl appearance? Only time will tell. And then how about Joe Burrow? Rocking the blonde hair, baby. I love it.
Yeah, he certainly is. Joe Burrow is back again. So, Lisi guy, let's start right now with where things are in the National Football League. It's been an uneasy offseason for the San Francisco 49ers, which is not the word you really want to use when it comes to a team, as we would expect, that has made it to two Super Bowls in the last five seasons and is anticipated to get back there once again. A Super Bowl co-favorite right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, a short favorite relative to the rest of the conference in the NFC at a 3-1 price. But Lisi guy, it has not been a great offseason for San Francisco. Yes, they signed Christian McCaffrey, the record-setting running back deal, but Brandon Ayuk, their top target as a pure wide receiver, is unhappy. A few weeks ago, demanded an official trade from San Francisco. But even with his unhappiness, hoping for a new deal, he showed up to training camp earlier this week. They're 11-time Pro Bowler and 13-year NFL veteran and one of the best offensive tackles in all of the National Football League. That being Trent Williams, did not. He is hoping for a restructured deal as well, and he has started a holdout in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's intriguing, and you could sort of make the correlation. I talked about this with Carver last night, that, you know, Trent Williams, I feel like he does this every other year. Did it in his days in Washington, did it a couple of years ago for the San Francisco 49ers, but it's similar in the sense of, doesn't this look a little eerily the way it played out with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, where they had the disagreement, they were both in OTAs and training camp, and it looked like, you know, everything was hunky-dory, but that team as a whole didn't have the continuity from the start of the regular season through the end, right? And even though they made the playoffs, they still bowed out early to the Kansas City Chiefs. That could be potentially maybe a similar situation for the San Francisco 49ers. Ben, we know they're the best team on paper in terms of maybe just all of the NFL, but can they put it together? If you have Brandon Ayuk that's not happy, why you would want that situation to linger, even if he's there watching practice? You want to get his ass out on the practice field, right? You want to get him reps so that he's prepared for week one. I understand these guys are athletes and at the elite level, but you can ill afford to miss any time, especially with injuries to a lineup. Debo Samuel's in, he's out. Ricky Pearsall's out now on the pup list. They need as many viable bodies in that lineup from week number one, and it's unfortunate, but again, they're priced at the top. I'm still betting against them this is a situation that potentially can linger into September.
Yeah, Joe, I think it's right to have questions right now about San Francisco. But as the odds makers see it, the Niners are expected to be back in an NFC Championship game, a place they have been four of the past 5 years with two Super Bowl appearances. We give the Cowboys a lot of flack, Joe, and rightfully so. Since their last Lombardi Trophy, the Super Bowl champs of 1995, the Cowboys have not been back there. They haven't even reached an NFC title game. The Niners are not necessarily that bad, as they have played in multiple Super Bowls since 1994, their last Lombardi Trophy in the illustrious history of that San Francisco organization, but they have come up short on the most significant of stages multiple times since 1994, and yet expected to be back there. And Joe, who knows if any of this happening in the offseason or the early days of training camp will have an effect. Last year, right, there was Debo Samuel. He was angry coming in through most of the offseason. He got his deal. Nick Bosa, not happy, wanted that new contract. That happened in the final few days before the actual regular season began. So there is a track record for all of this with the 49ers and GM John Lynch, who seems overly optimistic that Brandon Ayuk will work itself out. They expect him to be in camp. He was. They have not even welcomed the idea at all of trading away Ayuk. They are not going to. So maybe these deals will come. Maybe it will take a few days, maybe a few weeks into training camp. But by the time the actual football that matters is played comes around, everything will be hunky-dory for San Francisco. But you want it to be hunky-dory and optimistic all offseason, all training camp, everything along, if you have the expectation of being there for a Super Bowl come mid-February, and the Niners don't. It's the energy. It's the vibe. Just things seem a little bit scattered right now for San Francisco, and all of this is happening right now. Well, you've paid Debo Samuel. You've paid Christian McCaffrey. You've paid Nick Bosa. And we know for a fact, Joe, at the end of this year, Brock Purdy, who has been on a supreme discount as the last pick of the 2022 NFL draft on his rookie deal, that he is going to be up for a substantial raise. So you've got a lot of financial figures to figure out in San Fran.
You do. And again, the financial pieces, again, is what John Lynch has to work out and whether this team is still together in terms of the long term. The short term is the locker room. And that is the biggest thing right now, is that you want to maintain that continuity. You don't want to have Brock Purdy, you know, dealing with Brandon Ayuk. You don't want to have Trent Williams dealing with the rest of the members of the offensive line. You want to have a cohesive unit that has their eyes set on not just an NFC championship, but a Super Bowl title, right? They were so close and lost it to Pat Mahomes in overtime. They are now the team that has to be the huntee. They have to have that killer instinct, and it's a lot harder when all of these off-the-field situations aren't in place. So I am curious to see how Lynch and Shanahan deal with this, not just off the field, but on it, especially week number one, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely so. And that week number one game, Lisey, as you alluded to, is a Monday night opener against Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. Trent Williams, who has been in San Francisco for 4 years, has been a Pro Bowler 11 seasons of his 13 total in the NFL, started his career in Washington. The last 3 years, Joe, has been an AP All-Pro first teamer, highly regarded as one of the best offensive linemen, offensive tackles, blindside blockers at that left tackle spot in all of the NFL. And he's seen Penei Sewell for Detroit and Christian Darrisaw just a few days ago get those record-setting deals, $28 million annually for Penei Sewell earlier this offseason, a little bit more than $28 million for Christian Darrisaw. Trent Williams is still making more than $23 million. He's one of the top five or top six highest paid O-linemen in the NFL, but clearly, Joe, he thinks he deserves more than that. Hard to fault him based on where market value is at this moment. We've seen a little bit of movement, by the way, on the 49ers price earlier in the offseason, plus 290. Everybody else starting with Detroit was a 6-1 number. Whether it's a little bit of that tampered optimism by the Bay or just higher evaluations for others in the NFC, the Niners enter training camp still the short favorites at a 3-1 price to win the NFC title, but both the Lions and the Eagles now just $2.50 behind at plus 550. More around the National Football League next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC. So we continue to go around training camp now that everybody has reported and the first day of practice is officially underway. Lisi Guy, with the good that training camp brings, football returns to our lives. There is also the fear of injury. We saw that in a few spots on day number one for some players in the secondary of two teams in the NFC expected to contribute. Darion Kendrick, a sixth-round pick for the Rams back in 2022, who started 12 games last year, was supposed to be one of the starting quarterback duos in L.A., is feared to have torn his ACL. Never good stuff to start off a year. Mekhi Blackman expected to contribute in the defensive backfield for Minnesota as well. Also feared to have a torn ACL on day number one of practice at Vikings training camp.
Yeah, it hurts the Rams a little bit more than Minnesota because, again, I think the Rams are more of a contender, not just for a wild card, but potentially even an NFC West title. So this does hurt them. But, again, I still am high on this team. I think they have enough depth, especially on the defensive front. I understand the secondary, but the defensive front from those additions of Jared Verse and Fisk, I think will really put a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and that should at least alleviate the secondary to some degree. Still very high on the Rams overall. I still think they have a legitimate shot to win the NFC Championship as a dark horse, 14-1. And Minnesota, again, you know, I understand that they made it to the playoffs 2 years ago with Kirk Cousins, right? 13-3. They won the, 10 or 11 one-score type of games. They were always on the right side until the playoffs hit. But this team has an identity problem right now. They have a star wide receiver. They have no real quarterback yet. We have to see if McCarthy lives up to the hype and then Sam Darnold. And that defense hasn't been all that great either. You know, that is the biggest thing is that, you know, if Minnesota had a dominant defense back when Kirk Cousins, you know, lost to the New York Giants, maybe, just maybe, he'd still be in Minnesota. So, again, I don't think it affects Minnesota long term in terms of their wins and losses this year. More of a hit for the L.A. Rams, but I think they still have the depth to make up for that.
Yeah, I do as well. 8.5 the win total for L.A. The over has the juice at minus 144. Good news for Los Angeles. Matthew Stafford reworked his deal, as we learned, showed up to training camp already on the field. Cooper Kupp is fully healthy. Puka Nacua, after a record-setting rookie year, there's a lot to like in L.A. But on defense, it's where they have struggled, and they lose, of course, a staple of that defense for the past decade. That is Aaron Donald announcing his retirement earlier this offseason. Minnesota, an interesting team, Joe. I would agree. 7.5 the win total. The under has the juice. They are the fourth and longest price in the NFC North. A lot rides on the shoulders and the right arm of J.J. McCarthy, if he is even the eventual starter. Joe, Scott and I, Scott Wetzel, of course, who hosts this show a couple of times a week, have had the conversation often about the rookie quarterbacks we expect to start week one, game one. We pretty much said with absolute certainty it's Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Probably 97-98% Bo Nix is in the mix right away for the Denver Broncos. We don't expect to see Michael Penix Jr. at all in his rookie campaign. If he does, things have gone awry quickly in Atlanta. But then it really falls on Drake May, as we heard from Jerod Mayo earlier this week, as the Pats opened up training camp. Jacoby Brissett is the most pro-ready guy at this moment. He'll get the reps. And we heard from Kevin O'Connell as the Vikings ended their offseason program that when they returned for camp, which of course happened over the weekend, Sam Darnold would be taking those first team reps. When/if J.J. McCarthy, when will he play this year?
I would say, you know, maybe 8 or 9 games in. Again, I think if you're Minnesota, You know, think about it, the regression, right? You were 13-3 2 years ago, and were one of the best teams in the NFC and the NFL, and now you have an identity problem, and you have a veteran quarterback in Sam Darnold and an elite offense, supposedly. You have to go with that right now. The experience and Justin Jefferson with O'Connell to see if at least maybe you can make a wild card run. If they start out 1-6, 1-7, then you can hand the reins to J.J. McCarthy, unless J.J. McCarthy just absolutely lights up training camp and is just hands down and separates himself from Sam Darnold, which I don't believe. I think that's the only way that J.J. starts week number one. Again, I think he give it to Darnold, see what he can do, and then if he fails and the team's under 500 and out of the mix midseason, then you give it to McCarthy to take over.
Playing in a virtual pick'em in New York inside MetLife against the Giants to start off the year week one, the Vikings open as a short 1.5 point favorite. It will be interesting to see what J.J. McCarthy does. He does not have a season-long passing yards prop listed on FanDuel. In fact, only 3 of the 6 rookie quarterbacks taken in the top 12 do. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Bo Nix. Joe, injury news from the guy who was formerly in Minneapolis, now in Atlanta. Kirk Cousins officially cleared to practice after suffering the torn Achilles last year that cut short his final year in Minnesota. Good news from the Falcons right away. And, of course, there is so much optimism surrounding this Atlanta team that has slightly been tempered, I guess you could say, Joe, by what they did in the NFL draft that was so peculiar to all of us.
Yeah, it was. Again, you know, what's peculiar in regards to, you know, they said they took best available player. It didn't fit an immediate need, but for them, that's what they did. You know, long-term view. Again, only time will tell in terms of that assessment. And that's where it really comes into what is the identity and what is the foresight of the team. The short term and long term, right? I think that's really what it comes down to. Are they viewing themselves as a legitimate contender for an NFC championship or an AFC championship, right? In terms of that type of mindset, or are they just saying, you know what, we're not sure, so we'll just take best available player? That really matters, right? Because if you're saying we're built to win now, that was a bad pick.
Yeah, I think it was, right? Terry Fontenot, who is the general manager in Atlanta, said we weren't sure when we would be drafting in the top 10 once again to get a quarterback of this caliber, but they take the older guy in Michael Penix Jr. after paying Kirk Cousins a $45 million deal. 9.5 the win total for the Dirty Birds this year. The over has the juice at minus 148. It has been 6 seasons since 2017 when the Atlanta Falcons last won double-digit games. More NFL news and notes as training camp is underway. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Training camp is underway, and so is practice for these teams around the National Football League. So, Joe, as we have the first and second full days of practices around the NFL, we keep up to date with all of the updates that we are given. In the last few minutes, Mike Tomlin, meeting with the media in Pittsburgh, said that Russell Wilson woke up with a calf issue this morning and was held out of the first practice for the Steelers at training camp. He's considered day to day. Calf issues tend to linger. They are not injuries to be trifled with. Justin Fields now taking first team reps.
Uh-oh, that plus 475 is looking fantastic right now. Week one starter, here it comes. Here, the old man can't handle it. I told you this would happen. This is what's going to happen. He's going to linger through training camp. Tomlin's going to get upset about the work ethic, and all of a sudden he's going to drop the hammer and start Justin Fields, the guy he wanted to start at the start of the year anyway. We all know it. He loves Justin Fields more than Russell Wilson. And rightfully so, if the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to make a run at an AFC North title and an AFC championship, the only guy guy that could take them there is Justin Fields. So this is a beautiful thing for if you're a Pittsburgh fan. So we'll see how this plays out. But I guarantee you he's going to be upset with Russell Wilson at some point through the process, whether it be rehab or productivity in terms of the preseason. Something's going to upset Mike Tomlin.
You said plus 450 for Fields to be the week one starter for the Steelers?
Well, I'm thinking when I took it a while ago. I took it basically
But where did you take that bet? What? I don't even see that bet.
Yeah.
Who did?
FanDuel.
Really?
Yeah. They had Russell Wilson as minus 1,000. And Justin Fields is plus 475 week one starter.
Wow. I've never seen that before.
Yeah. They had a bunch of them. They had Justin Fields. They had who was the other one? They had three of them. Let me think now. Oh, God. They had Jacoby Brissett.
We can come back to it.
Jacoby Brissett and Drake May.
Oh, they did?
Yep, and they had one more. They had one more that was up there. And they had it in the offseason. They had it right after
they
the
have
draft.
It in Jersey. I see it now. Oh.
Okay.
Wow, okay.
Apologize! Apologize! What an apology!
I wasn't questioning you. I thought maybe it was a Carver and Lisi bit where he gave you plus 450 or something. All right, listen, I do apologize if it came off confrontational or questioning.
I know where you were going with that. What are you, out of your mind? We know I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy.
It's a beautiful mind, as I like
it
to say.
It is a beautiful mind. Every Saturday and Sunday, right here on the grid during the football season.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, so to Joe's point, this actually informs the conversation we had about J.J. McCarthy. There is the Raiders. Aiden O'Connell is the favorite at minus 140. The Patriots, Jacoby Brissett, minus 1,600 to be the week one starter. And Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in Pittsburgh, where Russ is now minus 620, Fields at plus 400. You are a market mover, my friend. Well done. So that helps you here, at least with Russell Wilson dealing with an early calf issue in his first training camp with the Steelers. Justin Fields on the opening day of practice in the Steel City in Latrobe, taking those opening reps with the ones. Interesting, Lisi guy. Interesting. Now, let me ask you, Joe. 8.5 to win total for Pittsburgh. We know the standard of success under Mike Tomlin. 17 years, never less than 8 wins, never a losing record. Whether it is Justin Fields or Russell Wilson, do you think Pittsburgh goes over 8.5?
Yeah, I think I'm torn because if it is Russell Wilson to start the year and he goes, you know, 6 games, I'm not banking on Pittsburgh to go over the 8.5. If they start Justin Fields like I believe they will in terms of week number 1 for whatever reason, then I think I give them a legitimate shot. I think he's an added dimension, and that's something that the Pittsburgh Steelers offense needs, especially with the fact of the way they want to run the football, right? We know that they have Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. They want to use potentially that RPO game. Justin Fields is the only guy that could bring that as opposed to Russell Wilson. So I would say if it's Wilson under, Fields over.
We'll go back to the conference where both guys played some college football. Justin Fields at Ohio State. Russell Wilson, of course, ending his collegiate career at Wisconsin. Big Ten Media Days, final day of it in Indianapolis. Up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. Media Days this week across the country at the Power Conference level come to a close. The fourth and final day of ACC Media Days in Charlotte. We'll check in with the Atlantic Coast Conference in just a little bit. Third and final day of Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. And one of the new West Coast newcomers was out there yesterday. Actually, both of the teams from Los Angeles at the podium on a Wednesday. Both both of the teams from the Northwest out there today. That includes Oregon's Dan Lanning. We'll get to him in just a moment. But, Lisa, guys, we always say when it comes to media days, you never want to be the guy at the end of the day that delivers the viral moment that everybody looks back on social media after a day at media days. A couple of weeks ago, it was Mike Gundy for the insensitive comment that who amongst us hasn't driven drunk thousands of times after a couple of beers? Not for anything insensitive, but just for nothing, really. UCLA's new head coach, Deshaun Foster, was that guy yesterday. Joe, I assume you saw his opening statement in Indianapolis at Big Ten Media Days?
I did. I attributed it or correlated it. It's similar to like a comedian going out there and just bombing, right? He was waiting for the punchline. You know, we're a team in California with USC, and everybody was just staring at him, and he had nowhere to go. He was a deer in the headlights. And it's shocking, Ben, because Deshaun Foster played in the Super Bowl. I mean, he's used to the media. He couldn't pivot. He didn't have an answer, and I get you, coach. I get you, coach. And listen, we all screw up. Hey, I fumble words on college and pro football today. That's why you love me. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to be able to at least maintain your composure. He looked like a high school guy out there. This is an NFL star, a guy that scored a touchdown in a Super Bowl. You're trying to get 18 and 20-something-year-old kids to your program. What happened? What are we doing here?
The lights were bright at Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. Deshaun Foster thrust into the head coaching spot in the middle of February in Westwood, probably unforeseen. That's when Chip Kelly left to take at least a title demotion to become the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Because these two teams now in the Big Ten Conference, an interconference demotion from a head coach at UCLA to an offensive coordinator at Ohio State, working under his former college quarterback, Ryan Day, from their time together at New Hampshire. So Deshaun Foster, back at his alma mater, where he was an outstanding and sensational tailback in the early 2000s, was the running backs coach under Chip Kelly the last few years for UCLA, and now the head coach. Throughout the rest of the day, of course, he had a ton of media to do in the car wash that is Media Days in Indianapolis. And he is a personable and entertaining guy, cracking jokes, having fun. It just, for whatever reason, the opening statement, which is supposed to be the planned part, Joe, it's not like they were hitting him with hardball questions around sensitive topics. It's the pre-planned speech that you get to deliver before anybody can even raise their hand to ask a question. And it was bad, oh so bad. But to Deshaun's credit, he did note afterward he would probably check Twitter, he would probably laugh at himself and move on. A self-proclaimed non-rah-rah guy now has a very tough task outside of speaking with the media. 4.5 the win total for UCLA, a team that has won at least 8 games each of the last 3 years under Chip Kelly. Lincoln Riley up at the podium yesterday as well, saying he's excited for the challenge that is the Big Ten, but he is no magician, meaning that he's not going to grant the Trojans a wish of getting to the Big Ten championship game right away. Now, there are some, Joe, including our good coworker Kevin Walsh, who hosts CFT with us, College Football Today, during the college football season, that feels pretty strongly that USC is about to come in and revolutionize the Big Ten, that their offensive pace, the scoring that Lincoln Riley offenses can put up, either during his days in Norman at Oklahoma or now even in LA at USC, is going to be something the Big Ten cannot contend with. What is your assessment on USC?
Well, a couple things. I'll just say, you know, I heard Lincoln Riley say he's not a magician. He's getting paid like one, like David Blaine back in the day and David Copperfield, so he better produce, you know, in regards to that. In regards to what Kevin believes, we've had multiple discussions about that on College Football Today. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree, but I believe you and I are in the same camp. You can outscore teams, but it falls on that defense. Can they be up to snuff for the physicality of the interior line play in terms of the offensive defense? defensive lines in the conference. Can they go toe-to-toe with the likes of Ohio State and even Oregon? You know, that was in the Pac-12. That, you know, the physical attributes that Dan Lanning has brought is something that you don't think of in terms of a Lincoln Riley team, and that's what's held them back in terms of his runs with Oklahoma and, more importantly, the last few years with Caleb Williams. Can D'Anton Lynn step up and lead that defense? You know, it's a huge hit to UCLA. Can that front seven actually elevate to just not – they don't have to be elite. Can they just be somewhat mediocre and above average, you know, slightly? If they could do that, they're going to get over the 7.5 win total, because I do believe Miller Moss can chuck it. So, it's interesting, because I told you this as well, to get 24-1 to win the Big Ten for USC and these huge inflated numbers to make the college football playoff, they're really good. You've never seen that in terms of a USC Lincoln Riley era or Lincoln Riley teams up until this point.
For sure. And listen, Lisey Guy, I still believe in the offensive numbers that USC will put up. That's not my question. There is no doubt, though, also in my estimation, that Lincoln Riley, of course, did not hit the potential that was expected with a Heisman-winning and generational-type quarterback in Caleb Williams. Just 7 regular season wins last year. Of course, the Holiday Bowl, in which Miller Moss absolutely shined against Louisville. There is a ton of talent offensively. Zachariah Branch is back. Mekhi Lemon is a young sophomore. They get the transfer from Mississippi State. My guy, Woody Marks, who I think is going to be a bell cow this year for USC. But the question with Lincoln Riley-led teams, even back at OU, was his kindred ties to Alex Grinch, who is no longer the defensive coordinator, which was a good move to move on. And it is D'Anton Lynn, who leaves UCLA to join USC. And even though they go to a new conference, it's still an interconference move, and the rivalry continues. But D'Anton Lynn, a successful defensive coordinator, a young, bright defensive mind, if he's up to snuff and you take his defensive prowess with what Lincoln Riley, of course, has the pedigree of doing offensively, this could be a dangerous USC team. I will wait and see. A difficult schedule in its first year in the Big Ten. Lisey Guy, today at the podium is Dan Lanning. He's up there right now. Oregon's head coach, of course, was highly touted this offseason. Many looked at him as replacing Nick Saban at Alabama. He said, nah, I like what's happening at Eugene. I'm invested here in Eugene. And Oregon enters the Big Ten, Joe, at the second best price at plus 200, less than a half dollar behind the favorites, Ohio State, to win the conference title in its very first year in the league. Are the expectations too lofty for Oregon, or can Dan Lanning bring the Ducks right there?
I think he can, and the physicality, his ability to coach in big games. I know he lost to Washington twice, but his teams are always prepared. They have a very lethal rushing attack, and Dylan Gabriel, one of the most prolific quarterbacks in all FBS, 30 touchdowns through the air last year. He's an experienced veteran. If he could get 85% of the production of Bo Nix last year, I think they knock off. I'm going to go out. They knock off Ohio State week number 2. I think Gabriel's better than Will Howard, and you and I could battle that out.
Oh, well, hold on a second. Week number 2? They play each other that early on? No.
Yeah. Yeah. September 7th.
That's Boise State. Oregon and Boise State. The second weekend of October.
It's the third week. It's the third week, Ohio State.
No, Oregon-Ohio State, now a conference matchup, is the second Saturday of October.
Oh, maybe.
Ohio
All
State.
Right. Maybe
Madison,
I'm wrong.
Austin Stadium. Regardless, we'll talk about it more on the other side, Lisey Guy, because we're coming up on the commercial break. That is going to be a game that is going to dictate much of the Big Ten title race this year. More on Ohio State and Oregon up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. Talking season continues in college football. That's Media Days this week. The ACC Media Days in Charlotte. It's fourth and final day on this Thursday. Third and final day in Indy at Big Ten Media Days. That rounds out, Joe, the four power conferences and their Media Days here as we get groomed for a 2024 college football season. You mentioned the game, Lisey guy, although we had to figure out exactly when it was in terms of its date on the calendar. It's the second Saturday in October that Ohio State and Oregon will face off inside Autzen Stadium, a game that very well could dictate the outcome of the Big Ten title race even in the middle of October. Lisey guy, right now there are odds associated with this matchup between the Buckeyes and the Ducks on the FanDuel Sportsbook. It's a pick 'em. It's minus 110 on both sides for the game in Eugene. The over-under 56.5. It could be a preview of the Big Ten title game on the second Saturday of October.
It can. And again, you know, obviously Ohio State on papers, you know, has talent and they have a lot of moving pieces, you know, Will Howard, Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, Abuka, and on the defensive side of the ball, the addition of Caleb Downs. And granted, it's Ryan Day and Chip Kelly. But again, I still think that Will Howard is a step under where Dylan Gabriel is. It's not a knock on Will Howard. I just don't think he's this legitimate, you know, elite passer. He struggled with consistency problems in terms of Kansas State. I think the pressure potentially could get to him. It's one thing playing in the Little Apple in Manhattan, Kansas, going up against Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. But now you're expected to not just win a Big Ten championship, but, you know, knock down that college football playoff door and win a championship for a national title. So that's the pressure that he feels. Can he step up? I don't know. That's why when they go to Eugene and face Dylan Gabriel, I have more confidence in the Ducks and Dan Lanning at home than I do Ryan Day and the Buckeyes on the road in that situation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game, Joe. I really, really do. The total is 56.5. You would expect it to be a shootout just with what both these offenses have. But, of course, Ohio State was one of the best defenses in the country last year. Oregon as good at getting after the quarterback of a Pac-12 team as you will find a season ago. I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you did, Joe, the big inflatable duck in the White River in downtown Indianapolis to get things going at Big Ten Media Days. Dan Lanning saying earlier today that we are mighty different. I hope we get to take that big floating duck to all our away games. We're innovative. Oregon entering the Big Ten with, not bragging rights per se, but with the moxie, Joe, I believe, that has the Ducks as a true contender. Now, we talked SEC Media Days last week, a newcomer in that league as well. Texas has the second best price to win the conference, only behind Georgia. In a way, a similar type of thing here, where two of the four best prices to reach the college football playoff, Oregon and Texas, two new members in the leagues they will play this year, each with the second best price to win a conference title. But, Lisey, I'll just say this for myself. I feel more confident that Oregon will even reach its conference championship game than Texas will reach the SEC title game.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, and again, we have talked about, you know, Texas playing in the SEC, the week-to-week grind of the conference. And Oregon, I believe, is built more as any other Pac-12 team coming into the Big Ten to you know, stress the physicality. That's the one thing that Dan Lanning has done. They were very good in run support, around 102 rushing yards per game. They could run it down your throat last year, averaging 185 on the ground. So that's what you want to see in terms of the transition. Moving or stepping up, you want to say, from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, and I think they're going to be just fine. Again, I think if we're looking Oregon and USC, which team just from a defensive perspective could go toe-to-toe with anybody in the Big Ten, I believe it is the Ducks. So again, Lanning's a fantastic coach, and he won a national championship as DC of Georgia, so I think he's up to the task, Ben. Great game planner and one of the best coaches, I believe, right now in terms of college football, even though maybe the resume doesn't suggest that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. What he has done in 2 years at Oregon should not be overlooked just because they fell short last year against Washington. By the way, Washington at the podium later this afternoon in Indy as well. Jed Fish takes the reins in Seattle. Although the Huskies finished as the national runner-up to Michigan, who will also be there today. The two teams, Joe, frankly, that played in the national title game last year look a lot different this year. Roster turnover, coaching staff turnover as well. Jim Harbaugh, now now in the National Football League, the head man of the Chargers. Kalen DeBoer, the head man last year in Seattle, now the head coach for Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So much roster turnover as well. Michigan only 4 starters back from last year's team, and that includes special teams. Washington only 3 starters back from last year's team, and that also includes special teams. So very different teams, Joe, than the teams that were our reigning national champs and national runner-ups.
Yeah, again, I think, you know, when you look at Michigan again and you look at Washington, I still think Michigan from a talent perspective, even though J.J. and all those wide receivers move on, there's still Donovan Edwards there, and I believe they still have some talent with Jerome Moore. Again, I know I'm in minority, but I think they match up very well against the Longhorns in the Big House. We talk about a 22-game home winning streak dating back the past, two and a half years. They can run it still with that offensive line, and again, depending upon Tuttle and Alex Uwuji, whoever wins, you still have some experience for the most part to at least lead that team. For Washington, I mean, Jed Fish is a great team, you know, great coach, but he's got no talent, and that's going to take a couple of years to at least bring that type of talent over to Seattle. And now with the change in terms of the Big Ten, knowing that they have to go to the likes of Penn State and some of their, you know, road trips this year, not going to be easy. I think they struggle for 5 wins at best.
Yeah, 5 wins. The win total for Washington is 6.5, so you're not far off, Joe, at least from what the odds makers expect, and the under does have the juice. Michigan's win total for a reigning national champ in college football to have a win total of 8.5, albeit the over heavily juiced at -162, is uncommon. It's a sign of the times of not only the roster turnover in Ann Arbor, the expanded Big Ten, and just the change of format that we have in these realigned leagues. But if there's a 9-3 Michigan team, don't think that keeps them out of the running from a college football playoff spot to be back in the CFP for a 4th straight season. A little bit more on media days. We'll focus on the ACC and big chest Mario Cristobal up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. Lisi Guy to ACC Media Days in Charlotte we go now, where yesterday at the podium was a team a lot of people are optimistic on entering 2024. That's the Miami Hurricanes. Mario Cristobal, who has never had an issue recruiting, had this to say at ACC kickoff. Quote, NIL has been around a long, long time. It's just actually legal now. End quote. For a guy that played at Miami, who understands how Miami may be recruited in the late 80s and 90s as well. That makes sense, Lisi Guy. And it's never been talent or even talent development for Mario Cristobal. It's getting the most out of that talent to produce wins and conference championships.
It is, but I'm tired of hearing about Mario Big Chest. You know, it's put up or shut up time, okay? You know, he was brought in to change the culture. He was brought in to change Miami from just being a nobody to being a contender immediately. And they had a shot last year. They were 5-0 before that meltdown with Georgia Tech. His quarterback, Taylor Van Dyke, is now playing for Wisconsin. Can Cam Ward be that guy? Or could he be De'Ara King 2.0 if he is, guess what? There's the potential, and there is a market out there at some point. He could be one of the first coaches fired this year. You know, they moved that week one matchup against Billy Napier, another dead man walking, a team that's supposed to only win 5 games. You lose that in-state rivalry game week number one, it's going to be a long season for Mario Big Chest. I don't want to hear the off-season stuff. Talk about it, do it on the field, and get some wins on your belt, because 8-4 is unacceptable.
Ooh, Lisi Guy bringing out the heat. 9.5 is the win total, Joe, for Miami. The under has the juice, but a 9-3 Miami team, would they be in consideration for a college football playoff spot? potentially. Joe, I've made the point to you. You've heard it, I'm sure, as well, in people projecting out what the Canes can do this season. A lot of people believe, with the talent on the roster, good on the defensive side of the football, and the additions they have made offensively, Cam Ward at the quarterback spot, Damian Martinez, the running back transfer from Oregon State, Xavier Restrepo stays. He's one of the best wide receivers in the ACC. That in year three under Mario Cristobal, Miami can take a similar leap forward as what Texas did last year under Steve Sarkisian. That led to a conference championship in the Big 12 and, of course, a spot in the college football playoff. I will say, Joe, I got to see it before I believe it on the Miami Hurricanes. And so I'm a little bit skeptical they will reach that eventual mountaintop. Can they be an 8 or 9 win team? I think so, despite the fact that Cristobal is 12-13 in his 2 years overall at Miami.
Yeah, again, that's for a mediocre coach, right? The amount of money that Cristobal has made, being a former alum, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, again, you know, we talk about the likes of the former U. If Ed Reed came there with the expectations in regards to, you know, Ed Reed being the coach, be 6.5 wins, 7 wins, losing to North Carolina, getting smacked around by NC State in Raleigh, losing a garbage game to Georgia Tech and Brent Key, that transition from a triple option attack. This is the U, baby. They all talk about the U. Since 2001-02, they have one double-digit winning season. It was the season that Mark Richt had them at 11-0 before Kenny Pickett knocked them out of the college football playoff. I'm tired of hearing about the hype of Miami. You got to show it. You got to show it on the field. The talk is cheap.
The talk is very cheap, and you're right, Joe, 10-3 in 2017. That was the last time Miami would have gone over their regular season win total of 9.5 this year. Because let's not forget, a bowl victory is not added up in your win total if Miami gets there. A conference championship, if Miami were to reach that in the ACC this year, is not added up in your win total for those regular season wins. 9.5 is the number for a reason. You got to get to 10 wins in the regular season, something they have only done once since joining the ACC. They've had 5 other years of 9-win football, but never more than that. And in the last few seasons, they've capped out at 8, and that was back in the COVID-shortened season of 2020 under Manny Diaz. It is a team that always has optimism because of what they did in the late 90s and early 2000s. We shall see. What's interesting about the Canes, a shorter price to make the college football playoff at plus 210 than the plus 440 number for Miami to win the ACC. What does that mean about the expanded field of 12 in this new CFP era? That's for another day. Maybe tomorrow, a Friday. We return at noon Eastern time on Sports Grid Radio. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. We'll talk to you on Football Full Circle tomorrow.